Hey everybody, welcome to the Little Monsters Movie Podcast.
Good evening, children of the night.
My name is Dino.
I'm Ted.
And we're going to be talking about an awesome movie today.
One of my absolute favorites.
The Wicker Man. The Wicker Man. 1973.
Not the
Nicolas Cage.
I was hoping we wouldn't even mention
it. I've never seen it. Okay,
I never saw it.
Well, yeah, most horror fans of The Wicker Man don't want to bring that one up anyway.
Yeah, so. I mean, I guess I want to start off by saying, normally we post the movies we're going to be watching ahead of time, so that you can watch them and then listen to us talk about it and you've already seen it. If you have not seen this film, just don't watch, go watch the movie and then come back. Because we're going to talk about the whole movie, you know, spoilers galore. Because there is a little bit of a reveal at the end once you realize what's been going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I just don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. I remember the first time I saw it, and it's gotten into my mind and under my skin, and just love it. It's not just one of my favorite horror movies, one of my favorite movies.
Even if you go into detail, it's not going to give anything away, I don't think.
I wouldn't want to spoil it for anybody who's never seen it. You know, I think we talked about it either last week or the week before. I first saw this movie when we went to that Beware video.
Yeah.
Ages ago, like 15 years ago. That all they rented out were horror movies and cult movies.
Is that where you first
I had heard of it. No, that's where I'd heard of it before, you know, reading the monster magazines. You know, maybe there was some talk of it coming out on DVD, because DVD was kind of newer then. And
yeah.
I saw the videotape from Magnum, and, you know, I rented that, and I rented Suspiria, and both of those had such a big, you know, it just kind of showed me horror movies can be something else.
Yeah.
And my tastes have gotten a little bit more discriminating, I think, since then. They've spoiled me a little. But Wicker Man, definitely. Just one of my all-time favorite movies now.
1973.
So, right. This started...
just the atmosphere in 1973. It's a great 1973 movie.
You know what I like about it? And when you watch it, you'll see that even though it was made in 73, there's not really anything that dates it to 1973. There's no cars or technology that dates it to that time. You could watch it now and go, yeah, this could be happening right now.
Well, the music.
There's that one part at the end, you get that little...
Well, all throughout. It's like that, you know, Simon Garfunkel. It's got...
Well, the music is...
Corn Husk and Harley.
Corn Rigs.
Yeah, whatever.
I have the soundtrack. I love it.
I mean, it's actually really, really cool. I mean, you know...
They were shooting for... I mean, just in a nutshell, this film's about a police officer, a very, very conservative, Christian, religious police officer. This takes place in Scotland, who receives an anonymous letter addressed specifically to him to come to this island off the coast called Summer Isle. Doesn't really exist.
Right.
And
Summer Isle, that's actually awesome too.
I know.
And the guy in charge, Lord Summer Isle.
Summer Isle, Christopher Lee. Yeah. And it includes a photograph of a young girl about 13 years old, said that she's been missing for several months. And could he please help? That's how the movie starts. Well, there's some scenes where, you know, he's in church and stuff before that. Because we're watching the final cut. There's multiple versions. There's an extended version. There's a theatrical version. Now there's this new final cut.
And I'm sure you, being a big fan, too, know the masonry involved in the movie. Even the very beginning, when he's at church. If you notice in the background, there's symbols of Freemasonry.
Well,
the back wall.
Masonry is certainly big in Scotland. There's the Scottish Rite of Masonry.
Wasn't there a part of it with the rituals they do? And
he's asking me because I'm a Mason.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything that was in that movie.
No, we won't say nothing.
And a lot of police officers are Masons, just kind of like historically. There's a lot of cops there.
I just threw that out there because I actually seen a lot of symbols throughout the movie that dealt with Freemasonry symbols.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but when they make the, towards the end when they're having the May Day festival and they cross the swords, that's, you take away the lines going this way and it is, you know, the Masonic symbol there.
Even when he goes into, like, we're jumping a little bit. Mm-hmm. When he goes to the Bureau of the Death, you know,
yeah,
whoever the woman was in the
Ingrid
office
Pitt.
There. Yeah. There were Freemason up with it in their uniforms up on the wall, even. Yeah. So, I mean, they were
good eyes
everywhere. And I spotted eyes. That just everywhere.
It's not one of the things I usually notice. I'll have to go back and kind of. I don't notice as many of the details that you're talking about, so. But that's the cool thing about the film. Every time I watch it, there's just more to watch. I could watch it all the time.
Great movie. And he plays the character of the police officer very well, too.
Yeah, I've never seen him Christian. In anything else. I know he's been in other things, but I've never watched him. A little bit about the movie. Christopher Lee, especially, was very dissatisfied with Hammer. He had done Satanic Rites of Dracula. That was the last Dracula movie he did for Hammer.
Yeah.
And... it's awful. And,
exactly.
There's,
yeah.
I mean, it's got, there's good to be found in any Hammer movie, but it's pretty much awful. And he was pretty dissatisfied with that and felt like he was being typecast. And he met up with this producer and they decided that, you know, they'd like to do, you know, a horror film together, something different, something that, you know, he could sort of, Christopher Lee could sort of sink his teeth into.
Yeah.
And, they bought the rights to a book called Ritual. I've never read it. I'd like to read it. And evidently they ended up using very little of Ritual to make this film. Little bits and pieces are in there,
yeah.
But from what I understand. I'd love to get my hands on a copy of the book and read it. There's even a novelization of Wicker Man, and I'd like to read that too. So they bought the rights, and then they started working on this film. And yeah, I think even to this day, Christopher Lee says this is his favorite film that he's done, and he's done, I think, 275 movies.
Really?
And this is one of his favorites that he loves to talk about. So. Yeah, and it's a great character he got to play. It's
exactly.
This is the type of horror film where it's the people are the monsters.
And he got to show the 70s do, which I think you really liked too. So, but, yeah. I love when, during the beginning of the movie, too, when they start, when he comes up in a plane, and I know I'm jumping right in
there. Yeah, that's
just... But all the villagers come out, you know, they're looking at this guy coming up, like, well, the windows are coming down, the old folk are coming
stranger,
up.
Stranger, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very just, close community, and any stranger is going to, you know, grab everybody's attention.
Yeah.
And I just love how it starts off, you know, he gets off the plane... You know, they finally let him come ashore, and he's showing them the picture, and no one knows who she is. Like, nah, she's not from this island. I've never heard.
They deny totally until he has a little bit of proof, and they go, oh, yeah, okay, right. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean...
Yeah, the name, every time. The last name, the girl who's missing, her name is Rowan Morrison.
Yes.
And, you know, they're all looking at this photograph. All these older gentlemen, they're all looking at the photograph. He's passing it around. She's not from this island. And he mentions the last name, Morrison. And you know, if they have Morrisons on this island. And, oh, there's Mae Morrison who runs the post office, the government office down there. And you might want to talk to her. But as he's walking away, they say, but that's not her daughter.
Yeah.
I love that. And it begins.
And that carries throughout the whole movie where they just...
There's people who will confirm who she is. There's people who are denying it.
Yeah, the longer the more you get into the movie, they do start going, oh, yeah, okay. You know, it's like a slow ease into, okay, Rowan Morrison was around, but, you know.
Right, so
which we'll get into, you know, alluding to if she's dead or alive or what happened to her. Yeah.
And just as we go through the film here, the character, the Sergeant Howie, is the officer's name, and he's very, you know, I don't think he really knows what to expect when he goes to Summer Isle as far as this community's religious beliefs and their views on certain subjects that some Christians would find very taboo, especially sex. And as of right now, once the film's starting off, you know, we hook up with Sergeant Howie, you know, he's the guy that we're strangers to. We're watching a movie. I don't know what's going on here, so I'm just like him. I'm walking through. And, you know, I feel a little bad for the guy. He's trying to find out what's happening to this missing girl. And
they're all denying it.
As the film goes on, I find myself being less and less sympathetic towards him. He's very intolerant. And we'll get into that in some of the parts of the film.
Right.
Just openly bashes everything they believe in. And, you know, can't believe that no one knows about Jesus Christ and, you know, resurrection. And every time he'll bring up something, they'll find something to nail him down a little bit with. And we'll get to some of that. And he's speechless. There's a couple of scenes where he's absolutely speechless after, you know, they pin him to the rack a little bit, too, about what he believes.
Yes.
So I find myself being less and less... And then at the end, I feel a little bad for him, too. But
right.
But throughout a big chunk of the middle of the movie, I don't really like him very much. He's kind of a jerk. Blatantly breaks the law. I mean, he's doing an investigation...
he's not letting anything get in his way.
No, basically. No, especially he's not letting the law get in his way.
There's a little girl missing, so he's also going to take every step he can.
He's
to find
breaking
her.
Into people's homes and searching. And,
once you find out that these people in this community are a little nutso.
Well,
in my eyes, I'm seeing it that way.
They have a plan. Let's just put it that way. So
I like when he does go to Mae Morrison's.
Mm-hmm, the post office?
She's got a candy store.
Yeah, it's also a sweet shop. Post office / sweet shop.
And he goes in there and he says, I like your rabbits. Mm-hmm. And she goes, they're hares.
That's right. Not silly old rabbits.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's a big thing, you know.
The March hare.
How dare you.
The March hare.
Exactly.
The rabbit the hare is a sign of spring, a sign of rebirth. We tell jokes, you know, rabbits, multiply, multiply like rabbits. They're just very fruitful, and they're a sign of the rebirth of spring. And in pagan religions, that was, you know, they were certainly a symbol of their belief.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like what we do. This is a community on this island of pagans worshiping the old gods. It's primarily like a fishing and agrarian community. They're known for their apples and produce and things like that.
Yeah. Their harvest.
Right.
Thus
so,
the Wicker Man.
Yes. Which we'll get to the Wicker Man. Yes. Wicker Man is actually based on something real. The first, I think, that we hear about it in writing is from the Romans. Right. You know, even Caesar and some of those guys wrote about it and said that these, you know, when they conquered like Britannia and Gaul and all these places, I think there's some back and forth if there was actually human sacrifice involved. There was definitely animal sacrifice and giving, you know, produce and all that. But I don't know if there's any definite, you know, proof that they actually did human sacrifice. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But I kind of did a little research on when I first started getting into this movie, and that's what I had found out. So, following along with the story, Sergeant Howie goes to the sweet shop, shows the lady who runs it, Mae Morrison. You know, I receive this letter.
And it's her daughter.
Is this your daughter? And she says, that's not my daughter. My daughter's right over here, Myrtle. She's over here painting a rabbit, little girl.
She's painting a hare.
A hare. Yes. Thank you. And, she has to leave for a moment, and this gives him an opportunity to talk to the child. Maybe he can get some information out of an unsuspecting child. And this is his first, well, almost his first little clue.
Right.
Because he says, does she know Rowan? And she says, of course I do. You know, she's, you know, out in the meadow.
She's one of the hares.
Right, and that's what she ends up saying, that she's a hare.
Yeah.
And so that throws him off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And,
So
it's getting on. By the time he gets there, it's afternoon, evening, going into the evening. So he goes to the inn, the Green Man Inn.
Oh, this place is great.
The characters
in the Green.
It is. I mean, thing is that, you know, the scenery, buildings, the music. They really strove for authenticity in this film, and I think that's another reason why it's so popular with a lot of horror fans. I don't know the people who made the music, you know, but I don't know much about them. I mean, but the music just sounds authentic. I don't know if any of these are actual real songs from that region, but
the music is great, and
it helps move the story along.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say this is a musical, but I mean, there's a song at least for the first half of the movie about every, you know, 10 minutes or so. There's a song, and the songs are all very. I mean, just very...
About what's going on in the movie.
Well, there's a lot of double meanings to the songs. I mean, the first song, that we come when he comes into the inn to get a room and a meal for the
landlord's
night,
daughter.
The landlord's daughter, who's played by Britt Eklund, who's just gorgeous.
Yeah,
just, she was a Bond girl too. I think the Spy
Who
Loves
Me. Yeah, she declothes in this movie, so
Well,
a little bit of a piece.
She does have a body double in the movie too.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, the backside scenes are a body double.
But when they do start singing that song, The Landlord's Daughter, very the sexual innuendos going everywhere.
Some
gyrating
going on.
Her father's back there. Just,
he doesn't even care.
Oh, no, he's laughing it up.
This old guy with a beard's just bumping into her backside a little bit. And
Sergeant Howie's just very,
very uncomfortable.
Oh my God, what's going on?
Yes, just very uncomfortable with this. And that's one of the things I like. All the songs in the film progress the story and have a... They're not just there, you know, like a Disney movie, just to be there.
Oh, right.
These songs have a point to being in the movie. So he shows the picture around to the, you know... This is just the congregating place of all the people in the community, the menfolk, and... He shows the picture around, and everyone acts as if they don't know who she is. Notices some photos on the wall.
Each year's harvest.
Right, there's like a little harvest festival in the fall, and there's a picture of a young girl and a big example of the produce for the season.
Yep.
And he notices that the picture from 1972 is missing. There's all these photos, and the one from 1972 is missing. He asks about it, and they just say that it's broken.
It fell down and broke.
He doesn't really think anything of it, but it sticks in his mind, and it's something that he'll remember later on.
Yeah.
gets his meal. That's where he finds out that, because he asks for dessert and asks for just for an apple. And because this is what Summer Isle is known for. They're known for their apples. This area of the world's like a temperate zone. It doesn't get too hot, doesn't get too cold.
Yeah.
And, you know, they grow, a lot of vegetables that you probably wouldn't think that they grow. I mean, there's palm trees on the island and things like that, but those things are there. So they do have those because of the environment. And that's where she tells them that they don't have any apples. She tries to tell them they've all been exported, but we're going to find out that isn't exactly true.
It's all canned.
Yeah, everything's canned. His beans are blue or turquoise. I think you said turquoise.
Turquoise, yeah. Yeah, and she's definitely very attractive.
Oh, Britt Eklund.
I'll just bring
fantastic.
That up again.
I mean, I think she was completely overdubbed in the movie. That's not her voice, I'm pretty sure. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was not her voice.
Okay.
And, this is the first movie I ever... Well, apart from Spy Who Loved Me, this is the only other movie I think I've ever seen.
Okay.
But had you seen the movie before?
The Wicker Man?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I watched it. Yeah, it was a long time... Before I just recently watched it again.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Because this is a film that was notoriously cut when it was put out. And it just reminds me because as we're talking about the story, a part that was cut out is coming up here pretty soon. That
let me know because I don't think I know all the versions as well as you would.
But. Yeah, it was cut for, you know, I think just when this film came out, it kind of just defies... categorization. It is a horror movie, but it's also a mystery. It's a musical. I mean, there's music in there. And, you know, it's like a thriller, kind of like a psychological type thriller, maybe.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of hard. It was probably a little bit hard to sell this movie.
It's definitely different, especially for 1973.
Right. I mean, there's nothing. And even now, I don't think there's anything like it.
Really?
And maybe that's just why for, like, you know, hardcore horror fans who know this movie and love this movie, that's why it sticks out.
Yeah.
There's nothing else like this. There's a million slasher movies. There's a million monster movies.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, this one, the monsters are people, like I was saying. And it's just, there's just like a little, kind of like reminds me of like The Shining. There's just a little sense of dread. The whole movie, nothing's going to end up being good in this film.
No.
And,
You get that feeling throughout that it's not going to end up very well. I mean,
And it was, you know, they decided to cut it so that they could pair it up with another movie, like as a double feature, like at drive-ins and things like that. And, you know, as the years went by, just these truncated versions of the movie is all that existed. There would occasionally be, like, screenings of a longer version, and they did eventually put that out on a DVD that I had. and the quality wasn't great. I think some of the footage was sourced from videotape and things like that. And then finally when they decided to try to put it back together the way that the director intended,
yeah.
you know, they had to find all these pieces. Some of the film, I think I had read a quote from Chris Reilly that some of it was buried as landfill to make a highway.
Really?
And unless you dig down in there, it's gone. And I think it turned out that Roger Corman had a print of the movie that they had sent him to see what he thought, you know, what trims would he recommend for an American audience. And he had a copy of almost the complete film, and they were able to use that and some other footage that was found to make this, what now we have on Blu-ray is the final cut, which I do notice some things missing from it that were in the extended version that I used to have on DVD. But there's almost all of it's here. Nothing that's not in it is, you know. I remember there's a part at the beginning where Sergeant Howie comes to the police station and a couple of guys are making fun of him before he even comes in. And they're talking about him.
Oh, really?
I mean, it'd been nice to have it, but it doesn't. The parts that I really remember there, like after Howie eats his meal, he goes outside for a little walk and stumbles into. There's a cemetery adjacent to the inn, and stumbles out into this big orgy scene. It's just people copulating right there in the grass out in the open.
They got all their clothes on. I mean, you know.
Some of them. There's a lady at the headstone weeping.
Yeah, she was fully unclothed. Yeah,
and so. That part, I think, in the regular theatrical version, that whole part was gone.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that was a bit risque.
And if you have the Blu-ray and you watch it, you can tell, you know, the parts from the theatrical edition are, you know, very good. The depth and clarity are very good. And then when you see some of the extended footage, it's definitely got a lot more grain and a
drop in quality. Right, right.
And I love a part where he goes back into the inn. He's,
yeah, he gets,
you know,
pissed off and goes,
enough of this. Goes back into his room and he hears, he doesn't realize that it's Lord Summerisle. It's Christopher Lee's character. It's the first time we see him.
Yes.
And without this scene, we don't see him until much later on in the movie. And he's offering, Britt Eklund's character's name is Willow McGregor,
mm-hmm.
he's offering a young boy as a, not a sacrifice, but he views her as the human
Aphrodite?
Right, the human incarnation of Aphrodite.
Yeah.
And he's offering her this young boy. And he goes up there.
Very
and,
nice of him to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, and the guy didn't look like he minded too much.
No, not at all.
And then, you know, Sergeant Howie's right next door. He's saying his prayers at his bedside, and he hears what's going on. Her room's right next door to his, and he's hearing what's
thin
going
walls,
on.
Thin
yeah.
walls.
And all the while, there's these fellas down in the pub playing this song called Gently Johnny.
Yeah, the hippies down there. And that's where you...
The
mood is just, like, great.
Right, and the song...
They're all singing.
Do you know
No, you probably know the lyrics. They're all looking up the room.
Right, they know what's going
singing.
On up there. And
oh,
just,
yeah.
You know, I mean, the lyrics, you know, I put my hand upon her thigh, and she said, do you want to try?
Right.
You know, I put my hand on her belly, and she said, do you want to fill me? And
mm-hmm.
I mean, just, you know, the lyrics, I mean, you know, this, I mean, it's, me, I don't want to say like in the 70s it was, you know, prudish, but they're probably a little bit more liberated than we are now.
Well,
but,
it was, yeah.
But for a film, you know, it's not... If you weren't paying attention, you probably didn't pay, you know, you paid any mind.
Yeah.
But what I really like, a part that had been cut out of the theatrical is when that's going on,
mm-hmm.
You know, Christopher Lee has this little monologue talking about how he, you know, really admires animals, how they don't have, you know, classes, and you know, they just, they do what they want, they don't have to worry about being happy, unhappy, and all the while there's these two snails on a branch kind of intertwining.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the story. I see why they probably would have cut that out for an American audience, but it just lends so much to it now. It's so
the cool. moodiness, the
little
symbolism to the, yeah, it's...
Little things, just, and I remember seeing that on the videotape.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like when it first came out on DVD, I got like this theatrical version. I didn't realize that stuff had been cut out.
Yeah.
And I remembered right away that part wasn't there. And then it came out with a big, like a box. It was in a wooden box. This is what I had for a long time.
Oh, yeah, I remember when you got that.
Yeah, that wooden box. Yeah. And inside was the DVD cases. And it had the theatrical, which, you know, coaster for your drink. Sorry. And... And this extended, which I had until the final cut came out. I watched the final cut and I realized, you know, pretty much everything I loved about the extended edition was in there. So I,
yeah.
you know, recycled that to somebody else who could enjoy it. So
I sold it on eBay.
Nah, I think I gave it to my sister or something.
Oh, okay.
Like that. You know. I'm not sure, but I don't have it anymore. I don't.
You got the version you want, so.
Right, and it just came out on Blu-ray here in the States, I think, in the last year or so. We waited a long time to get a really decent copy of this film. It was like, you know, one of my last holdouts that I really needed. I love this movie so much.
Yeah. You got your collection, right? So you're pretty set on what you have now? Or?
Can someone please put Suspiria out on Blu-ray in the United States? I know it's supposedly coming, but please. and do it nice. After that, I think I'm done. Okay. Unless Universal puts out, you know, some more. I'd love to see some of them. But, I'm the big movie collector, I think, out of both of us. I don't think you know, I have my shelf and my movies. I don't have a lot, though. I'm very particular.
Well, all mine's on hard drive, so. But anyways.
I just like to have something physical, you know. I still buy records, CDs, and, you know, books, regular books. And I just like it that way.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
So where are we in our talk of the movie? So
Wakes
up the next morning, and it's the day before May Day. So the first day is April 29th, 1973, the next April 30th, and he's going to continue his investigation. He really didn't get too far that first day. Yeah. So he
heads out to, what, the...
It's time for another song, because the kids have got the maypole going.
Right, that's all right. Right. Yeah.
And, you know, and that's another song that's got some, you know, double meanings to some of the lyrics, you know, and, you know, the kids are all running around the maypole, which is a big phallic symbol, and... yeah, and you're right. He's going to the school.
Yeah.
And he walks in, and what is she talking about as soon as he walks in? She's asking the class what the maypole represent, and the phallic symbol. And he walks in, like, right when she says the word penis.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's it. Filth.
He's just so detested by the whole thing.
He takes her outside.
How can your name of male body part like this to children? But he was very...
And I love how she tells him... And the woman who plays the teacher, I can't remember her name, but I believe she was married to Sean Connery at the time.
Really?
Yeah, stupid stuff I know.
Sean Connery.
Yes. And, she says, you know, I didn't think the police had any, you know, business in education. Like, well, we'll see about that.
And he wants the ledger, and she says, no, you can't have that. You need to get permission from...
Oh, yeah, everybody
says that, and he says, nope, you're going to show me, and you're going to show me
now. No respect for any protocol.
No.
Even though I think Lord Samurai would have given him permission for anything he wanted to do. Because we're going to see, this is all just, you know... Because he's going to end up seeing these things anyway.
Yeah.
So he passes the picture around to the girls. They all say they don't know her. Every desk is full except for one, so he's very suspicious. He says, you know, I'm going to write her name on the board. They got a lesson on the board. Doesn't care. He erases the whole lesson.
He erases half the board.
Right, and I used to teach, so I'd appreciate that. He comes in there...
The teacher's going, I got to write that back up there. And right. It's very neat.
And all he does is write Rowan Morrison. He couldn't have just said it. He erases half the teacher's lesson to write Rowan Morrison.
I never thought of it that way. I mean,
it's because you didn't teach.
Although, what was she teaching? I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, but
penises.
Yeah. And all the girls in there are just all very...
Giggly. Giggly.
And, oh, we're not telling you nothing. You know,
right. And
they all deny knowing the girl. I mean,
they don't know her. He asks whose desk that was.
One lone desk in the middle of the room.
Nobody. It's nobody's desk. And
he's just like, they're all just lying out there.
I probably would feel that way too, you know? And then he finally says, you know, let me see your ledger. And she won't. Let him see it first. Well, she doesn't offer much resistance. She tells him he needs permission. And then,
how about the cockroach in the desk when he lifts up?
Oh, yeah, she's got the girl with, was it, nail in the desk?
Yeah, and the cockroach is going around.
Tied to a string.
And she tells him, she goes, he goes around and around.
Until he can't move anymore?
Yeah.
He's like, well.
Very sadistic of her, I mean.
And she says, you know, the poor thing. He's like, poor thing, then why do you do it?
Just to be evil.
And I know, since we mentioned it, the 2006 remake, which I never saw, but before I came over to talk about the movie, I did watch the trailer for it because I've never seen it. I just wanted to see, like, you know, a couple things. I didn't really want to talk about it because I know everyone hates it, and they do show a scene in the trailer where he opens a desk and, like, a crow or a bird flies out.
Okay.
I mean, the bird doesn't make any noise in there.
I've seen it. It was so long ago.
You watched
it? Oh, God, I think it was when you turned me on to the original Wicker Man, and I did watch it, and I don't think I was very impressed with it.
I don't think anyone.
It's 2006, so it was a while ago, so.
And I've never seen, not just, you know, I like Nick Cage. I like a lot of his films.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, he's in a lot of crap, but he's usually the best thing about it, kind of like Tim Curry.
Right.
He's in a lot of bad movies, but he's always the best thing about those movies.
Exactly.
And, he gets the ledger, and sure enough, Rowan Morrison.
She's on.
And it's got her age, 13, and he looks over where she lives, and it says, the post office. So now, he's ticked off.
Oh,
he just feels everyone's lying to him, everyone's playing a game, takes the teacher outside, and this is where he really, I think, gets the first taste of what they really believe. And
right, because she out and out says that... Okay, the girl was here, but in a roundabout way, she's not explaining what she means by dead.
Right,
alive.
He says, "Is she dead? She's either dead or alive." And she said, "We don't use the word dead."
Right, and she don't even say it. She goes,
"Yes."
So yeah,
and she starts to explain some of the things that they believe, that you know, they believe in reincarnation, that they would come back as animals or plants or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's amazed, you know, haven't these children ever learned of Christianity, Jesus Christ, you know? And this is one of the times where they pin him down a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They say, you know, those dead bodies in the ground don't lend themselves too easy for children to understand the idea of resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can understand reincarnation, that the spirit goes somewhere else and the body decays in the ground.
Right.
But for the body to just arise back up out of the ground.
Yeah.
And that's his first little taste of, you know, it's just kind of being stumped, you know. And,
yeah.
I mean, because when you really think about it, I mean, he looks so down on what they believe. Yet, you know, he doesn't, you know, take that ability to analyze things and point it at himself, at what he believes.
Right.
And why he so devoutly believes something that has its own share of you know, mystical qualities to it. So.
Yeah. Another acute observation is all the pussy willows on the in the area. They're just all in bloom. They're everywhere.
Pussy willows?
Yeah, well, I mean,
oh,
you know. Phallic symbols. You know,
Oh, yeah.
Just bringing it up. There is a scene later on where they show a huge bush in the shape of a...
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
Male. And then... all the pussy willows everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Throughout it. I mean, just, they're everywhere.
Right. Yes.
I mean, but anyway.
Well, the place is surrounded by phallic symbols, especially
yeah.
this time of year. So, let's see. After that, there's another cemetery adjacent to the school. I don't know if it's another cemetery, the same cemetery. Well, she says it used to be a church, and she says it's not really a church anymore, a long time ago.
Abandoned.
So he's going to, you know, just, not for any particular reason, he decides to walk on in there. Comes across a lady breastfeeding and holding an
egg.
Just sitting there. Hi. And
offering this to the god.
Oh, do you remember, like, the headstone?
Okay.
The one he walks in, it just says someone's name, and it says, protected by the ejaculation of serpents.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, it's one of the headstones. He looks at it, and that's what it says on there. And, again, just another...
That is so rude.
Well, this is, you know... There's another,
and he knocks everything off.
Yes, when he's going to make the cross,
and he takes two wooden pieces of wood.
Yep, breaks it.
Oh well, the breaking too is just so easy. Like it was the director came over.
And it's like a
started it off for a little
wood.
Bit for him, and yeah, I know cray wood,
mm-hmm.
easy to break, and yeah, puts it into a cross and throws it on there.
Right, I mean, just the most intolerant man I think I've ever seen in a movie.
Oh yeah. And I think that's where he finds out about the whole reincarnation thing and what their thoughts on it, because there's a tree planted over
on
every
grave.
Yes.
Right. And the groundskeeper's there. And the only thing I remember this guy from is the weird guy in Clockwork Orange. Alex's parole officer or whatever.
Yes. That's right.
I remember from Clockwork Orange. And
what is hanging on the trees? I forget again.
It's the umbilical. The umbilical
is that
cord.
What that is?
Yeah,
okay.
The umbilical cord.
Okay.
I guess they keep them, and when they pass away, they kind of hang them on the tree that they plant on
Christmas
the grave.
Time, I mean.
And so he asks him, you know, who is, you know, this is Rowan Morrison's grave. He confirms this is Rowan Morrison's grave, that the headstone just hasn't arrived yet.
Mm-hmm.
and that she died about the time that the letter said. You know, he said she's been gone for 6-7 months, and I think that's what he says, you know, like seven yeah. months or something like that, that she's been buried. So he's just very confused, you know, he's, you know, why are, if she's dead, why are they lying? And that's when he starts suspecting some foul play might be involved, that everyone's covering this up and, you know, someone wrote this anonymous letter. Yeah. And
I still don't think he understands that it has anything to do with religion or anything like that.
Not yet. I don't.
Yeah.
No, he'll put it together soon, but he doesn't get it yet. So then, once he finds out that she's dead, or that people have confirmed that she's that, he goes back to the post office / sweet shop. And is this the part where the daughter, the other daughter's getting
she's
the frog?
She's got a sore throat.
To get rid of the sore throat.
Yeah.
And
oh, can you imagine putting a frog in your throat?
If it works, I would do it. Because I hate sore throat.
There, it took away your sore throat now. See,
he's croaking. Well, then the frog was croaking yeah. like crazy. And he goes in there basically just as, you know, you lied to me. And then, you know, he's going to go to the Hall of Records,
yeah.
and he's going to find a death certificate. And this is where we see Ingrid Pitt. She has a smallish role in this movie. She's an alumni of Hammer movies, Vampire Lovers,
okay.
Countess Dracula, one of my favorites.
Probably came along with Christopher Lee. He probably told her to heck with Hammer films. Come over here with me, do this film.
She did other films. Those are the only two Hammer movies that I know for sure
she did. She's got a can of peaches on her desk, too.
Yeah, a can of peaches. And she doesn't look all that attractive when we first see her. Her hair is done it weird. But by the end of the movie, her hair is blonde and down, and she's gorgeous. So, two of my favorites are this. But no, like Countess Dracula and Vampire, there was Ingrid Pitt.
Stuff, very cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the Hammer Glamour book, you know, just
Hammer
love that book. So he asks to see the you know, the record of deaths, and Rowan Morrison's not in there. There's no listing that Rowan Morrison had died, and if there's no there's no death certificate. So there's no actual proof that she died, except for people telling him that that's her grave, and everyone else saying they don't know who she is.
Yeah.
So I really like the interplay going on here where, you know, he's being lied to, but then he's getting a little bit of the truth, just enough to make him suspicious and stick around.
Right.
Because that, you know, yeah. he could just say, you know, I'm going to go back. I'm going to get some more cops, and I'm coming out
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I'm going to get back up.
Find out what's going on.
Exactly.
And he doesn't do it. He stays. He's so determined.
Because you would think that just her name being in that ledger for the school alone is enough evidence to go back, get...
to warrant a bigger investigation.
Yeah, but he doesn't, you know.
Nope.
So, yeah.
So this is where he's starting to think of some foul play. And this is when the picture from the Green Man Inn gets back into his mind. And he goes to the guy who develops the photos. He's the pharmacist / photo developer.
Everyone does medicine and I take pictures.
And you walk in the store and there's jars of foreskins. And wasn't there like a there's like a vet like pigs in it or something like that.
Yeah.
And
the thing with that too, though, is part of its body was about 2 or 3 inches just up over the case it was in.
Right.
I mean, wouldn't that just rot? I guess the liquid is just...
I guess.
Anyways, whatever.
But it was cool. There's all kinds of cool stuff in this shop. You know, it's like an apothecary, you know?
Yeah.
And,
cool little store. Not sure who's buying anything.
Yeah, really, well, you know, if they need medicine. You know, they probably have like one doctor. I mean... But it is cool how it's just so self-contained. And then he asks, he's going there to ask if he's kept, you know, negatives or copies of the picture. He informs him that the picture from last year is missing, gone.
And he goes, and, really?
Oh, yeah. What do you suppose could have happened to him? And he says he doesn't keep copies. You know, he doesn't keep any copies. He doesn't have the photos. So he views that as a dead end and goes and... And now it's time to go see the boss.
Yeah, Lord
everyone's always telling him, Lord Summerisle, one of Christopher Lee's best parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing. I mean, still something he could kind of sink his teeth into, really play the character. And the character's got a couple of sides, I think, by the end of the film.
Yeah.
So you know, Howie's on the carriage ride, and he's going to see something else he ain't going to like here.
Yeah.
You remember?
The young girls.
The dancing
scene. They're like, what, 15, 16, who knows how young.
We're going to say in this movie they were 18, all right.
Yeah.
Maybe in the story they were younger.
Yeah, they're naked, they're in a kind of a ritual going on, jumping over the flame like a bonfire.
And it's like a Stonehenge
kind
of thing. It's the stones, the old druid stones are there.
And are they actually naked in the movie? Because it looks like skin suits. I mean, you know, like...
Man, I don't know. I don't know if they had skin suits in the same... I'm going to say they're naked. And and I like it.
Well, as Lord Summerisle says when he starts talking to Sergeant Howie, they can't wear clothes because they would burn.
Isn't that the best part? He's like, now, of course they can't jump through fire wearing clothes.
And you got to love when he walks
in.
In
the movie.
Oh, it is. It's great. As if the flames are coming
and I love
out,
it. You know,
covering
they're
their
singing
whole
this,
body. You know,
they're but. Singing this little song and jumping over the flame and dancing back and forth and... you know, he's disgusted. But yet he still goes to the window a couple times and looks at what's going on.
In disgust. Oh, my God.
You know, he's in Lord Summerisle's house. He's waiting for him to come down. He's standing right by the window, you know.
And the whole time, Lord Summerisle's
right,
in the
sitting
chair,
right there.
Back, you know, and he just pokes his head out.
Hello.
I'm here.
And you filthy animal.
Oh, and he's got a lot of nice stuff in that house.
Oh, he's got a lot.
It would go for a lot of money. I mean, that is...
He's got a lot of
estate
heads.
Sale? I mean, come on. Very nice, though. Very nice.
Yes. He's the Lord Summerisle.
Yes.
And this is... yeah, of course, Howie's got to bash him a little bit about, you know, these girls dancing naked over here. And
he comes back with great, like we said, great, you know, reasons why they are like that.
Right. He's saying, you know, it's part of their beliefs. Mm-hmm. They are, they're preparing themselves for the May Day Festival, and they're hoping to make themselves, what's the word? You want to be, when a woman wants to be, you know, she basically just wants to be fertile, thank you.
Yeah.
And they're hoping to be... You know, jumping through the fire so that the fire god will, you know, fill them and they'll have a child of a god.
Eggs
and,
will keep dropping. Boom. Right. Boom.
And Howie thinks this is, you know, ridiculous. They don't know anything of Jesus. And I love it. He says, you know, whose mother was also, you know, a virgin impregnated, I believe, by a ghost or something like that, to that effect. And he shuts right up. He doesn't say anything, and I love that. Because he can't. He can't say anything.
Right.
They're nailing him about his beliefs, you know, any chance they get.
Yes.
And it's absolutely true. You know, so, and they go for a little... He asks for permission to exhume Rowan Morrison's grave.
Right.
Which he completely says, yes, go right ahead. That's why I said, you know, every time someone said, go to Lord Summerisle, he would have said yes anyway, but he never asked. But, yeah, it's all just part of this game, and that's what we're going to learn as we're watching the movie. It's just a game. Everyone's in on it. And
he's laughing inside, going...
And that's why, part of why the movie is frightening, is that this game that everyone's playing with him, they have researched him, they know who he is before they send that letter, they know what kind of a person he is. I can only imagine maybe they had someone come and kind of spy on someone, or they had to know somehow. Uh-huh. And it would be kind of interesting to know how they picked him. Sometimes, you know, what you don't know is even more frightening. And these people just blatantly believe in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think some of this movie, you know, resonates today, you know, with everything we've got going on in the world and people with their religious beliefs and, you know, just this, you know, really this... zealous belief that they have that, you know, it's going to come to a crescendo at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So this is where, you know, Lord Summerisle kind of explains the whole bit, you know, how his grandfather came to the island
100 years ago
and learned how, you know, because of the fertile soil, the
volcanic soil
that, you know, he learned how to make different strains of fruits and vegetables. And once, you know, and Christianity had tried to establish itself on this island, and because he came up with these other strains of fruits and vegetables that would grow better on this island than what they were trying to do, you know, the people got really excited, and to kind of keep them happy and keep them working and keep the whole community doing what this original Lord Summerall wanted him to do, he gave them back, like you said, he gave them back their old gods, yeah. and said it was because of the old gods that this was happening. And this is where I get to where, you know, by the end of the film, if you've seen the film, you know where it goes. Does Christopher Lee's character really believe these things? Because he knows his grandfather did this on purpose to the, you know, to the people. The people believe this. All the people that live in this community, they believe the old gods.
Oh, yeah.
But I kind of wonder, and it's never fully, stated mm-hmm. for you to figure out. You know, it's just for yourself to figure out yeah. if he really believes in these old gods or not. I want to say that he probably does not. But
you think so, yeah?
I do. I think he doesn't actually believe this. This is just what's going to keep the people happy, keep them working, keep Summerall prosperous.
It's been passed down to him, so he's continuing on the
That's what I think. And he explains all these things to him. This is, you know, how we believe, and this is, you know, and he gives him permission to exhume the body if he wants to exhume the body. And, you know, be on your way. He's like, I'm sure there's no foul play. Go ahead. And, you know, you'd probably want to be out of here before tomorrow. If you're so easily offended, you probably don't want to be here on May Day.
Making him, of course, want to be there. If he's telling him to go, you're going
exactly.
to want to stay.
Exactly.
So,
you know, it's like he's repulsed, but he wants to see. You know, he can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, and May Day's still celebrated. I mean, it's a spring festival to in this case it's to appease the gods with sacrifice mm-hmm. to ensure a good fall harvest. It's a spring ritual of rebirth and renewal. Mm-hmm. There's always, like, when they have festivals or even around here they have them, and a girl always likes to sit at the foot of the maypole to see, make sure she's fertile. And there's a lot of pagan things that we still do. I mean, we have the Easter Bunny.
Yeah.
Just like the March Hare and everything that they talk about in the film, we have, the Easter Bunny, and that's supposed to be the resurrection of Jesus, but somehow Jesus and the Easter Bunny got all tangled up.
Yeah.
And, Christmas.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people even realize, mistletoe, that's from the Druids, and a Christmas tree, that's pagan as well.
Right.
I mean,
well, yeah, it's all.
Everyone is celebrating, while you're celebrating the birth of a Christian savior, you're also incorporating pagan symbolism with it as well.
Yeah.
And I always find that really interesting. I'm not a religious person at all, and I just find that really interesting that we do that. And I get a little kick out of pointing it out to people. So, not in a mean way, I just, you know what that is. So,
that's facts, so yeah, understandable.
But I think a lot of people just don't ever take the time to think about it, and yeah, it's just something we do. Why do you put a tree in your house? What does that have to do with Jesus?
It looks pretty.
It does. It does.
Well, I like to get presents under there.
Oh, yeah, and presents, it's all about
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah. And so what, he goes and he digs up?
Yeah, he and the guy from Clockwork Orange, you don't know his name, dig up the
Rowan
grave.
Morrison, yeah. And Rowan he doesn't Morrison. Find a body, but he finds
a hair.
A hair. Not a rabbit.
A hair.
He finds a hair. Not a piece of hair, but he finds a hair.
Bunny rabbit hair.
Yeah.
And I love he goes back to Summerall. Like, it's night. He doesn't care.
They're enjoying some wine.
Yeah, the he's teacher from the school. I think her name's like maybe Miss Rose. I think they're at the piano. He's saying, hey, did you listen to any Christopher Lee's heavy metal yet?
Oh, I haven't.
Yeah,
no,
Christopher
I
Lee.
I haven't.
He does metal.
He's on YouTube, yeah.
Yes. And yeah. And you hear how he's singing there?
Yeah.
It's kind of the same, just he's older.
Really? Okay.
So, he's got that big voice. And
So anyway,
he's playing the piano, they're singing some song, and Sergeant Howie just comes in and flops this hair right on the floor. I mean, not a
right
little...
Right next to the woman in her nightgown.
Flop.
There she is.
I found that in Rowan Morrison's grave.
Do you love his, like, Victorian kind of
when he says
outfit? I don't know.
Oh, Christopher Lee's.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the puffy shirt like Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's what it is.
The puffy shirt.
Oh, man.
And every time I've watched this movie, I don't know why, whenever he says, I found that in Rowan Morrison's grave, I just think of Scrooge McDuck. And just the way he says it just reminds me of Uncle Scrooge from DuckTales. In a grave. And, it's just,
Never thought
they, You know, they think nothing of it. Like, yeah, you know, she loved the hairs, and I think she'd be very happy with this. I mean, as far as they're concerned, especially the teacher, Miss Rose, is, you know, who's a devout believer, I still question whether Christopher Lee mm-hmm. believes these things, but he certainly acts like he does.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence either way. It's just my gut feeling because of the history, and he knows that where those old gods came from. But maybe he believes that, you know, they really did bring back the old gods. It could certainly be.
Yeah.
And as far as they're concerned, she has reincarnated, and, you know, this is what she has come back as, and, you know, her spirit's going to be a hare out in the meadows somewhere.
Nope.
And, he threatens he's going to go get some more cops, he's coming back, and go ahead, rings the little bell, the butler comes and takes him away. And
he's sweating, too, so it must be a hot night.
I think he's just so frustrated and
sweat coming down. Yeah, he can't put up with this too much longer.
Because this is where he voices his concern that he really thinks that this is foul play. Okay. That this is when he first says, you know, I think that she died from some sort. She was murdered in some sort of pagan ritual.
Yeah.
And he's starting to put the whole picture thing back together again.
Right.
And he wants to know where that picture is, if Rowan Morrison was in that picture from last year. So he goes immediately from Lord Summerisle's house to bust back into the druggist, photographer place.
Yeah, / pharmacist, yeah.
And does find that he does indeed. He kept, like, the negatives.
Yeah.
And by God, thank God that Howie knows how to develop a picture.
Right, right. Because he's the chemicals he needed.
Yeah, all the fluids there. and he develops a picture, and sure enough, you know, he sees that it is in the picture that was missing on the wall. It is Rowan Morrison, and there's very little fruit and vegetables there.
So it was
and
a bad harvest.
So now he realizes, bad harvest. Mm. And this is where he realizes that, you know, it was a poor harvest, and she was either sacrificed or is going to be sacrificed for a better harvest for the next year to the gods. And that's where he's now he's putting it all together, and now it's kind of like a race against time. He wants to find where she is. He feels that she's still alive, that they're waiting to sacrifice her, because he knows the next day is the May Day festival, and this is what's going to keep him there.
Right.
So and then, you know, they zoom in on the calendar, May Day, the next
May
day.
May 1st, yes. Oh, no. So that's when, he thinks to go either save her or,
Right, and he does, you know, think he's going to go get more officers and come back, but they've seen to that, so.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not going to happen.
And, you know, he flies in on this little plane that's parked on the water, and he can't really leave in the darkness, so he's got to wait till the morning to go.
Right.
And then comes, like, my favorite part of the movie. And if you've seen it, you know what my favorite part of the movie is.
Yeah.
Tell them all about your favorite part of the movie.
Well, he goes back to his apartment, whatever,
his hotel room.
And, she starts knocking on to... what's her name? Willow.
Willow. I like when she walks by the room, you just see her chatting. She's like, Sergeant.
He starts enticing her.
She starts enticing him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you said he starts enticing.
Okay.
Laying on the bed.
She's laying on the bed, knocking on the door, all naked and stuff.
And again, the guys, your hippie guys, are downstairs playing
the
song.
Music, yeah.
They're just playing music. It's called Willow's Song.
She's just a prostitute up there, and all the people
downstairs. She's Aphrodite incarnate.
Oh, I know, okay. Anyways,
and he's praying. This is the scene. He's at the bed praying again.
Oh yeah.
And she's singing this song, trying to tantalize him. Had a lot of sexual double meanings in this song.
Right.
You know, especially the one I remember is about the bull. You know, how a maid can milk a bull and every stroke a bucket full. And,
And she's walking around the room so slowly and
erotic. Banging on the walls. Boom, and, boom. Which is a body double. When you see her from behind, it's a body double. It's not really. I don't know why. That's her. We gotta watch that favorite part here while I'm doing.
But he is so trying not to.
I know he's breaking his mind. He's engaged.
Yes, he's.
They do
he's
establish
at
the beginning of the. I know,
he's at the wall. And he's like
opens the door,
do
closes it back up.
Yes,
and he's sliding down the wall. My God, I want her so bad.
I mean, who knows? Maybe something.
And this is really. I mean, this is his temptation. They want to. I mean. You know, I mean, they're going to establish why they picked him later on. Right. But I think this was like his big test.
Yeah.
You know, if he had given in, if he had gone in there to have her...
He wouldn't have been a good sacrifice.
Yeah, he would not... Right, which we get to... Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah.
It's all right. You know about it already. You know it. You know where it's going. Yeah, and, you know, he resists. He does resist. And
he's a good guy.
He really believes. You know, he's engaged. He's a very devout Christian, and he stands by his beliefs. I'll give him that, even though he's intolerant and but he stood by what he believed. So you know, he walks it like he talks it. Yeah. And
she's still walking around naked.
Yeah, I mean, sings the whole song. She really tries to get him in there, but he does not do it. Goes to bed, unbuttons his shirt, and he gets back in the bed.
He is going nuts.
And the next morning, she, you know, brings him breakfast, and you know he sleeps late, and she said, you know, I thought you were going to visit me. Yeah, and I love that, you know, and he kind of explains he's engaged and he doesn't believe in it before marriage and all
he does,
that.
He does specify and that, yeah.
These people obviously do. So, and then it takes us to May Day, the May Day Festival.
Yeah.
And it starts off, you know, after he has that brief conversation with Willow, he does try to leave.
Right.
He tries to leave.
And you gotta love when all the old men come up with their masks.
Yeah, yeah, and the kids and everybody. And that used to be like, that was the picture that I saw in a magazine, the picture of everyone wearing like the mask, the fish and the goat and whatever. I remember seeing that in one of the magazines, and that's where I'd first heard about it, but you know, you couldn't go to a Blockbuster or anything and rent that tape. You know, nobody had that tape. Huh. It was kind of like David Lynch's Eraserhead. Nobody had that movie.
Right.
You know, except this one place.
Oh, you know what? We got to do Eraserhead.
We'll do Eraserhead one time.
Oh, that is a movie that's out there. But anyway.
All right. There was one video store in North Royalton that had Eraserhead. And I would drive from where I live out to North Royalton, a little plaza, and I would rent Eraserhead when I wanted Eraserhead.
The days when you'd have to
drive around.
Yes, to see who had what movie.
And that wasn't like a Blockbuster or anything. That was like a little mom and pop.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Kind of like Beware. And Blockbuster would never have, you know, a movie like Wicker Man or Eraserhead or anything. They never had it.
But yeah, he's very pissed because
his plane won't work. They screwed with it. And like the guy said, if any of the children had been out here, like the kids are messing with the plane. Can you bring the dinghy back, please? He's got his little megaphone. And they've done this in order to keep him to stay.
Yeah.
He's passed all the tests. And what we will find is that he's livid now. He's going to check. He goes to the library. Okay, just to look up a little bit about May Day, and that's where he kind of learns about the
sacrifice.
He learns about the characters that are going to be portrayed in the May Day Festival. The what do they call it? Like a horse, which in this film looks a little bit more like almost like a sea monster kind of. It's a guy who wears a big horse around his waist, and the jaw claps, and you're going to do this big parade and a big dance. There's Lord Summerisle is going to play like what do they call it? Like the man, woman.
Yeah.
He dresses kind of like a woman in hair, and he's got his scythe in one hand. And,
they're all getting ready for that.
And then Punch, the fool, the king for a day. He's like the jester kind of character. And we find that Willow's father, the innkeeper, Mr. McGregor, plays Punch.
Mm.
So he learns a little bit about the May Day Festival. He makes the rounds. He goes to the what's her name? Morrison's mother.
May Morrison.
And he basically tells her right there, I am going to search every house, every building. I am going to find Rowan. I know she's alive. I know what you guys are planning. How can you do this? This is your daughter. And she doesn't, you know.
She goes, go ahead. Whatever you want
to do. Yeah, I mean, whatever. And then he proceeds to do this. I mean, he's already.
Knocking on doors, walking right in.
He broke into the photo place, breaking and entering.
Yeah.
No warrants. No, I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't know, warrants, whatever. But, and then he forces his way into every home. And I love like the first one he goes in, the kids look out the window and they're wearing their masks. He's like, take those off. No, take them off. Oh, he's just so mad. It's their festival. Oh,
he's pissed. Well, they're all... he's in this little nightmare that's going
it's
on.
It's true.
And he
it's
doesn't
true.
Know that it's going on.
Right. I mean, you he's... know? You know, he's going, he's searching buildings, he walks in on Ingrid Pitt taking a bath.
He's just laying there in right. the old tub, you know, naked.
He, you know, he even looks out a window, sees a boat. I don't know what, I'm going to go check that boat.
Yep.
Walks across town, checks the boat, nothing on the boat. Goes to the bakeries where they're making the big bread. And I love how when they're making the bread,
mm-hmm.
like the big bread man, it's in a coffin, like a steel coffin, and then they pull it out of the oven.
Yes.
That's so awesome. And yeah, he's searching all around, and he doesn't see any sign of Rowan Morrison anywhere. Mm. Goes back, says he's going to... And I love this, too, that he's going to go back to his room and take a nap for half an hour. And
because he's been so tired knocking down doors and, you know...
But one cool thing that they do here is, you know, he's taking a nap, and Mr. McGregor and Willow are talking, and they... If you don't listen real quick, you can't hear what they say, but they say Hand of Glory. That, you know, they're going to use the Hand of Glory on him. And if you know anything about the Hand of Glory, do you remember when he's searching through the houses, he goes into, I think it's maybe a funeral parlor, and he's lifting up coffins.
Right.
And he lifts up the lid of one coffin, there's a body in there. Mm. There's the coins on the eyes, and you can tell that there's a hand missing.
Yeah.
All right? And then with the hand, and then when they mention the Hand of Glory, that's that dude's hand.
Yeah.
All right? And what they would do, the Hand of Glory...
Which is in his room later.
Right.
He knocks it off.
They say they're going to use the Hand of Glory. And what that was used for, they would usually... And here it's a little bit different in the movie. They would take, let's say, like a murderer or someone who was going to be hanged or something like that. The hand that did the crime, they would cut that hand off.
Right.
And they would, you know, put some wax, candle wax on it. And they would, you know, burn that, and anybody who... It was used for lots of different things, but how it pertains to the Wicker Man movie is whoever was in contact with it would make them not be able to move. And so that's why they're going to use the Hand of Glory. And they don't say that in the movie,
right.
But that's, you know... Because when I first went, I was like, what's the deal with this hand? And I could kind of figure out where they got it from, but it was
right.
like, how, you know, they're burning it? Why?
Didn't explain it. Too well.
No, so I had to kind of research that.
Figure it out yourself.
And there's lots of things that they used it for, but that's a real thing, the Hand of Glory. And yeah, they put on a candle stand and light it on fire, and somehow he is able to rouse up a little bit enough to knock it over, takes the candlestick over, and now I don't know if this was all planned. Obviously, I don't think this was planned.
Yeah.
But knocks out Mr. McGregor while he's getting ready to dress up as Punch, ties him to the bed, he's got a gag, and he's all tied up, and Sergeant Howie decides he's going to dress up as Punch, and he's going to get into this festival and find out for himself what's going on.
Infiltrate. Yeah.
And so they're having the parade or whatever, and Christopher Lee's yelling at him, you know, come on, you know, get into it, dance.
Because he's not doing it right, because...
I suppose you got drunk at your own bar. And I don't know if Christopher Lee realizes if it's Howie yet.
Right, yeah. I don't think so.
No. I think everybody realizes it's Howie when he takes off his mask and we see that it's Howie.
Yeah.
But, and I like, you know, all the women start showing. Ingrid Pitt comes again with her hair all down and beautiful. And his job is to kind of take his little stick and whack them all on the bum. And it says they're just doing this march, and they're all wearing all kinds of different, you know, masks. Cool, cool stuff.
Mask, yeah.
Like real cow's heads and owls and fish.
Yeah.
A lot of hares, rabbits.
Yeah.
So they march all this way through the town, through the village, and, you know, they're supposed to be heading to the beach, to down their sacred path, he says.
And the whole time they're watching the sun getting lower, lower, lower.
Right, right, because everything's going to happen at sunset.
Yes.
And, you know, there's the part that we were talking about at the beginning with the swords.
Right.
There's these fellas, you know, with swords, and part of it, they have a little stage, little sword fight as they're going through the parade.
Yeah.
And they all line up and make their swords into like a Star of David. And everyone takes a little turn. They start saying chop, chop,
chop,
chop. And they all have to take turns putting their heads through the swords and coming back out.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's going to take a turn. And, you know, when it's Howie's turn, I think he's a little scared. He's like, come on, McGregor, you know what to do. Everyone takes a turn. And I love when they finally do chop off someone's head. It's like done on purpose, like a child's wearing a costume with like a big head on it.
Yeah.
Of a hair.
Yeah.
And they just slice that right off. And he kind of gives him, how he kind of gives himself away there, because he stops and he's looking, and it's almost like he wants to go and make sure they're okay.
Yeah.
But everyone else knows what's going on.
Yeah, they've been doing this for 100 years. I mean,
right, and you know,
we sure they know it's. So they're taking pictures with the old
camera. Oh yeah, the old guy's taking his pictures. And eventually they make their way, you know, down to where the cave is. You know, the rocks, the cave. There's a cave there. And that's where we see Rowan Morrison. She's, you know, being
running
held.
Running through the cave.
Well, she's been held. You know, she's there. She's got her white virgin's dress on.
Yeah.
Little crown of flowers. She's tied up. And, you know, they zoom in on her, so we know for sure that's her.
Yeah.
And that's when Howie, you know, in his costume and stuff, just takes off. Starts running up the hill. Everyone, what the heck's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when everybody, I think, maybe that's when everybody realizes that, you know, oh, there's Howie. He's doing it. But it's all still kind of like part of the plan.
Yeah.
So the only thing that I kind of think makes this a 70s movie is the music that plays when they're chasing through the cave to get out. It is kind of like that 70s-ish music.
Okay.
But, you know, Rowan's in on this too. She's like, you know, do you know what they're going to do to me? I don't like this place. Help me. And, I mean, you know, there's a couple of burly guys trying to run up, the hill, trying to get at him. But they make their way through the cave, come out the other side, and then, you know, there's Lord Summerisle right there. And, you know, Rowan runs right into his arms. You know, did I do it right? Did I do it okay? And, you know, now is where the plan's going to be revealed.
Right.
Everything that, you know, we kind of have been figuring out along the way, you know, he's going to be. And this is where I start to feel a little bad for him again. you know, from like the time, you know, like after that first night that he's there to about this point, he's kind of a jerk.
I understand.
You know, he's breaking the law. He's you know,
his attitude.
His attitude towards other people.
Yeah.
But this is where I start to feel sorry for him again. Once the plan is revealed to him, this is where Christopher Lee, Lord Summerisle, starts telling him, you know, you were brought here. We controlled everything you thought, everything you did from the time you got here.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, he's surrounded by all the village folk here.
Yeah.
And
nowhere
this is
to go.
This is
go.
The part to me that's very frightening is that, you know, they are all in on it. And it's not just like in on it like a plot or anything. They honestly believe that this is what they should do.
Oh, right.
You know, and it's revealed that, you know, they needed a special kind of sacrifice because the crops failed.
Yeah.
You know, you know, you can sacrifice animals, and that's okay. You can sacrifice a child, and that's okay. But if you can get, what did he say, a particular kind of adult, that's even better. So then they explained they needed someone to come there willingly, which he did. He got that letter, and he came of his own free will. He didn't have to go, but he decided to go. Someone with, they said a representative of a king, and they figure that because he's a cop, you know, he's got, you know,
a little bit of power,
some power, and that he's a virgin, and which he is, and so those are the things that make him that special kind of sacrifice that they can use.
Yeah,
and you know, it's revealed that he is going to be sacrificed for the harvest next year.
Man, and it makes you wonder though how the heck they came up with this such an elaborate plan.
Everyone fully believed it. Everyone, I mean. You just know that if anybody comes looking for this guy, there's not going to be one trace. The plane's going to be sunk.
No. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to dismantle it and sink it, and no one's ever going to say anything. And they all, it's not just, you know, like I said, it's not just like a plot, you know, to kill somebody. They believe.
Right.
Like, you know, they think this is great, that he should be happy about this. You know, he believes in Jesus, and he's going to be a martyr.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is good for him, too. Mm-hmm. That's what they tell him. This is good for you, too.
Right.
You know, you're going to help us. But you're also going to, you know, go be with Jesus, who you love so much, and be a martyr, and sit at the table with the saints, and you know, this is kind of like where the whole, you know, when it comes right down to it, yeah, maybe that's true, but you don't want to die.
No.
And, you know, they're preparing his body. You know, they got the big guys holding him down, and I feel like he's not resisting very much, but at the same time, he's being held down. There's no...
Right.
He could resist all he wants, but, I mean, with... And you know, everyone's gonna
you think you'd be scratching.
And you know what I have a hard time with? And the other thing that's really frightening about this is there's not one person not one person in this whole film that we're shown that says, you know, should we really do this? This is not right. You know, this.
Oh, yeah.
That's what why. It's just the.
From the children all the way up.
All the way. And that's what I said. You know, in this movie, it's the people who are monsters that, you know, they honestly believe this, that this is going to work.
Yes.
And, you know, how he even says, you know, it's. Sacrifice isn't going to do it. You know, your soil's not good anymore. It's not, you know, this environment's not proper for these kind of strains of fruits and vegetables you want to grow. You know, sacrificing me isn't going to make your crops grow. And next, and I love it, you know, next year. And this is always the part that made me think Christopher Lee maybe doesn't believe it. You know, it's just, not for any particular reason, just that when he says, you know, next year, you know, only the Lord Summerisle is going to be good enough to be sacrificed. He's the only one that's going to, you know, be good enough to be sacrificed for your crops next year. And he says, you know, the crops will succeed. And, you know, he believes that this is, you know, but it almost seemed to me like when he said that, he's got a little look, you know, like,
yeah.
If like this doesn't work, I'm going to be next. And,
like yeah, he's just rolling the dice, hoping that everything's great next year.
Right. I mean, maybe he really believes it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Part of me just thinks that maybe he realizes, yeah, this could be me next year.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to get that far to know. And I said, it's just the fact that everyone honestly believes that this is the right thing to do just makes it so scary and so frightening. And then when they start dragging him up the hill,
carrying him to the huge
the wicker man when he sees it,
and the classic.
That's what I feel so bad for. You know, because he's all, you know, Jesus Christ, no, please, no. And then
yeah, he's fighting back as he's in this giant wicker man.
And if you've seen the film, it's just very intimidating. It's
60 foot tall.
It's so amazing. Yeah. It's, you know, there's little compartments in there where they have animals and produce. And then, you know, he's all dressed in virgin white and they've cleansed his body.
Yeah,
and I like how the girls use their hair to dry him. I mean, they're treating him lovingly and with respect. Well, I mean, you know, they don't see it the same way that he sees it. They don't see it as murder. You know,
poor guy.
You know, they see it as something good for him.
Yeah.
And that he came willingly. You know, he came to them. Mm-hmm. So this gave them almost the right to do this. Mm-hmm. And they put him in there, they set it ablaze, and they're all singing their pagan song like this, and hand in hand, all in a circle around the wicker man, and he's spouting out Psalm 23, and
it's reaching out and, as if he can,
and he's telling them all, you know, it's going to be you will die, and you know that he believes in the Lord Jesus Christ, and he's, you know, singing, you know, Psalm 23 like as a song. And and you just hear the last couple times he yells out Jesus and or Christ, and the flames are all engulfed. It's just, you know, it's blood curdling when he yells those out.
Oh yeah.
And you know, the wicker man's
burning down. It's a scene, man.
It's a scene. it's worth the whole movie. It's what we've built up to, and there's no happy ending. This is like a 70, you know, in the 70s they could do that.
Yeah.
They had movies and it didn't, it just ended. And it was kind of nihilistic, just ended, and, you know, characters were in limbo or dead and didn't have a happy ending. And, you know, it shows the head of the wicker man. I love it when it kind of tilts over. It's burned and it's tilted over. And then there's the setting sun, and you hear the rest of the song, and the film fades out.
And,
you know, it's just what's cool. Yeah. I mean, movies like I said, nothing really, except for maybe a couple little odd pieces of music, nothing really dates this movie to the 70s like other movies do.
Right.
You know, this movie could have just as easily taken place in the 2000s, I think.
Oh, yeah, because they're so isolated.
Right.
You know.
And, you know, there's no phones. There's no, I don't see any character really using a phone.
Right.
I mean, there's no computers, but, you know, they're an isolated village. So maybe they probably wouldn't have very good internet access or cell phone coverage or anything like that.
Yeah.
But there's no cars. You don't see any cars. You see, you know, a rowboat. You see a plane that looks just like a plane that you would see today.
Yeah.
And apart from that, you know, I mean, that's all the technology you really see. So this is something that could happen right now.
Oh, yeah. Timeless movie. I mean,
that's why, you know, that's another thing. That's what makes it timeless. It's not dated like some other films are.
Yeah.
And I just don't think anybody today would make that exact same movie.
Well, that's why I guess everybody hated the remake. They just like anything, usually.
I don't see anybody who saw that remake saw the original. It's so damn hard to find.
Yeah.
Well, maybe back. Well, it was on DVD by that time.
Yeah.
But
But they don't put as much effort into these remakes anymore. I mean, it's just...
No, I mean...
Do you know of any remakes that are better than the original? That's a tough question. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean,
no, I mean, there's some that, you know, I suppose are good. I'll tell you what, I do like the newer version of True Grit, just because I'm not a big John Wayne fan.
Okay.
But I've read the True Grit book, and I think the newer version's a lot truer to the book than the John Wayne version. So there you go, here's my one example. Cool. I think it's the only remake I own. So, but other than that, I can't think. As far as like horror films and things like that, no, I don't think any remakes are better than the originals at all. It's not always like a remake, though. Sometimes, you know, like you take Dracula, there's been lots of different Draculas, but Dracula is a book. It's just a reinterpretation of a book. Right. And that's kind of how I see True Grit, too. It's just another reinterpretation of the book.
Right.
So
what do you think... What do you think we should do next week? Any ideas? You like Eraserhead? You want to?
We could do Eraserhead. We could do something.
Think
funny
about it.
Yeah. Or we always put it out there for you guys. If you watch this and there's a movie you want us to do, let us know. We definitely we give it like a day or two before we decide.
Right.
I think we didn't hear anything, so we said we're gonna go Wicker Man.
Yeah.
And we hope you guys really like this. If you haven't seen this film, you got to see it. We'll post in a day or two what we're gonna do for next week. Got lots of ideas still, and you know we've got the room all set up for you. It wasn't like this last week when you couldn't see us.
Yeah, finally went live. Yeah. So and I'll be adding more stuff as we go along here. But
our little memorabilia. Yes. But this is definitely one of my favorite movies, and I've really liked. I could still talk about this.
Yes, very good movie.
A lot of details about it. A lot of things. If you haven't seen it, you gotta watch this movie.
Yes.
I think a lot of hardcore horror movie fans have seen it. People that like, you know, the more gore and things like that may not get much out of this. It's definitely slower. Right. But that's the thing I like about movies from that time is they took the time to tell a story suck you in. You know?
Story-wise, this is up there.
You know, I mean, there's lots of newer horror movie fans that think, you know, The Exorcist isn't scary. And The Exorcist scares the hell out of me.
Oh, God.
I mean, just because it's like a confirmation of evil and...
Oh, without a doubt.
And... Even though that's a very mainstream film, it's something we could talk about one time. Just if you know anything that happened while they were making it.
Just to believe.
All the things that happened.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of bad things happened during the making of the Exorcist film.
A lot of bad things happened while I was watching it.
Yeah.
At the drive-in theater. Which I think we talked about
your uncle passed
before.
Out.
Yes. Very, very scary for a young'un.
Right. But I think, you know, a film like this, like Exorcist, like Suspiria... The Shining really gets to me. You know, I don't need the gore. I don't need the that stuff. You know, that's all cool. I like Reanimator and stuff like that. You know, I like my share of that stuff.
My zombie movies.
Yeah, you know.
And
there's a place for that. But the ones that, like I said, haunt my mind, get under my skin, Wicker Man, especially the ending of Wicker Man, the whole movie. Shining, just the whole time, I'm just... tense. And I've seen it. I know exactly what happens.
Right.
And Suspiria, just with the images and the colors and the music and that film, that's another one we could do if you haven't seen it.
Suspiria.
Have you seen Suspiria?
Long time ago.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
So we can definitely do that again.
Fantastic.
So.
And Exorcist, like I said, it's just like a confirmation of, I'm not a religious person, but it's just like a confirmation of evil that it exists and it hates us. And, those are the horror movies, you know, of more modern times, like, that it just really get in my, you know, the Hammers and the Universals. Those are great. I love my monsters. And
heck yeah,
but just the imagery, these are the films that I just mentioned that actually kind of like frighten me. And not a one of them really have like any monsters in it.
No, the psychological.
Know. Right. And
movies. Yeah.
So fantastic film. I've really enjoyed talking about this movie.
Heck yeah.
So. If you haven't seen it, watch it, and we'll be back next week with something new.
Yep, and like us on Facebook. We're
Please.
On Facebook.
Like me.
Yeah, like us everywhere. We're on YouTube, iTunes. Check us out. Everything's the Little Monsters Movie Podcast. So, yep, and that's our first live show, so hopefully you guys like it.
Absolutely.
And till next week.
Good evening.
Yeah.